What up? What up? What up? It's Chance Berryman. Welcome back to the podcast. In this episode of the podcast, I'm going to be going over the 14 presuppositions of neuro-linguistic programming. So the 14 presupps of NLP, for short, for people who are familiar with this, with these concepts. So basically what happened is, long story short, I went to an NLP seminar a month ago in Austin, Texas. It was hosted by Dr. Matt James and some of his other colleagues and co-teachers with the company Empowerment Partnership. So four-day NLP seminar, which was amazing, amazing, awesome, mind-blowing, paradigm shifting, all of the things. And now I'm doing a 30-step course to be able to become an NLP practitioner, which is the first level of like NLP certification. In this 30-step program, which is like a home study course, there is a section in which I'm asked to describe the 14 presuppositions of NLP to a friend. So then I thought, well, what if I just record it and instead of explaining the precepts of NLP to just one person, I explain it to all of you, my kind and gentle readers or listeners. So thanks for joining me for this. So real quick, I'm just going to be talking about the presuppositions of NLP. For you guys who don't know what NLP is, I guess it's like a framework of thinking or a way to improve communication between an individual and the world and individual and themselves. I apologize if you can hear my dog barking in the yard. He's outside and the door is closed, but he's a little guy with a big bark. He's like only like 50 pounds. He's very light, but if you hear him bark, he sounds like a 125-pound German Shepherd. All right. So apologize for that background noise. There's no way for me to make him stop, actually. He just barks when he sees other dogs and squirrels. All right. So NLP is a model of communicating with yourself and the world. And it's modeled after some very famous and prominent psychotherapists, hypnotists, and other successful people. So basically, the main assumption is that if somebody else can do something, you can learn how to do it. And there are just some ideas that we keep in mind about that. The presuppositions of NLP, I've seen them presented a bunch of different ways. For example, if you look them up, you'll see often sometimes people have 12 presuppositions. Right here, the book that I'm using, we have 14. They're always, they can often be presented in different order. Some of them are like some people leave out ones and swap them with another, but as far as I'm concerned, the things I've seen, they're mostly consistent. Like the ideas are mostly consistent, even if they are in different orders or like worded differently. I think everything pretty much stays basic. So these are basically the comparison that I would use is like the Ten Commandments. Like the Ten Commandments in Judaism is analogous to the presuppositions of NLP, just the basic framework of how we think about this, how we deal with things, how we do things. And it's funny that I'm on camera right now because really I was just going to record the podcast, but when I queued up Anchor, which is now Spotify for podcasters, I realized that now there's an option to record yourself on video as well. So I decided, why not? All right. So now you guys are seeing my face, even though I'm far from camera ready. I'm not sure I even brushed my teeth. I haven't brushed my teeth yet this morning. So luckily you can't smell my breath, but you can hear my words. All right. So I'm going to explain the precepts of NLP with all that backstory. Thanks for sticking with me, y'all. All right. Number one, the first one is respect for other people's models of the world. So how I understand this is that everybody has like different priorities and values. And of course, all of us have had many different types of experiences. Some of us might be from two-parent households. Some of us have a single parent, or were raised by our grandparents, or some people may have been adopted or lived in foster care in different countries. Some of us may be like the oldest in a big family like I am. I'm the oldest of six kids. Some of us may be the middle child, the baby and only child, things like that. So all of these things, along with like race, religion, culture, economic background, the education level of your parents, the like affluence or lack of affluence, the community that you were raised in, all of these things create a model of the world. And I'm often fascinated when I speak to people and like just hear them talking about their different values, how other people may value things very highly that I don't even hardly ever think about. And I'm sure people have the same, I'm 100% guaranteed that many people have the same thoughts about me. Like when they hear me talking about things that are important to me, my goals and my values, how probably different that is to probably the average person or most average people, regular people. But even though I might notice that, okay, this particular thing is very important to this person. For example, some people may be religious. I live in Salt Lake City, Utah, where there is a big population of Latter-day Saints, which are commonly called Mormons, right? A big Mormon population. So I may hear people talk about going on their mission, going to church or other aspects of their religion that I don't know, really just don't know much about, but I can respect their model of the world and just be open-minded about it. When they talk about things that are important to them, oh, on my mission, I did this. Oh, when I got married, I did this, or my kids. There are people who I know who have their family, their children is are a big part of their lives. And even though I don't have kids, I can still be like, oh, wow, that's, you know, interesting, and try to relate to that person on what that's like for them, right? So that's number one, respecting the other person's model of the world. And I have in my notes here, because when I was in the seminar, I was taking notes, is that doesn't mean accepting or buying in. Like, I don't necessarily have to be like, oh, well, now I need to become LDS and get married and have five kids just because I'm talking to somebody and that's their model of the world. But respecting it, honestly, this is, it's so cool that this is number one, because imagine the kind of disagreements you would save yourself and just how much more connection you could have with almost everybody if you just respected their model of the world, their priorities, their values, their beliefs, and where they're at. Even if you personally were like, okay, that's not for me, or I disagree, but you could respect that they believe that and kind of even just have compassion and empathy for how they got there, right? Like, what happened in this person's life that they have this model of the world, these expectations, you know, these priorities. So that's number one. All right, so number two, behavior and change are to be evaluated in terms of context and ecology. So those are some words that people maybe don't use regularly in that sentence. But in terms of context, how I explain this or how I understand it is that when you change something in your life, you have to understand that the ecology of it, how we use that word in NLP, means like, how is it going to affect all the other things going on in your life? For example, I signed up for a trail running series. I signed up for a trail running series here in Salt Lake City, Utah. So I'm going to be running trail races every other Wednesday for the whole summer. So how does that, I mean, that's a cool goal, right? Or a cool plan to have. I'm going to be running these beautiful races, probably meet some interesting people, see some cool stuff, get some good exercise. So what is the ecology of that? Well, that means I'm going to have to start running to practice for that, because these are trail races in the mountains, the steep ass mountains in Utah. So I'm going to have to start running. That means I probably need to wake up earlier and run before work. That means I need to plan some time on the weekends to run and also stretch and recover and foam roll. I need to probably be thinking about getting like electrolyte packs and I need running shoes. I realize I don't have trail running shoes. I have shoes that I lift in that I can kind of run around my neighborhood in, but I need like actual trail running shoes to be running in the mountains on, like rocks and tree roots and stuff like that. So when you make a decision, when you make a change in your life, be aware of the ecology of the change that you're making. For people who are in relationships, let's say that you're married and you have a few kids, but you want to go back to school and get a master's degree. That's going to take time away from your wife, from your family and your children. And so if that's a goal that you have, a person who's in that situation probably wants to talk to their spouse, talk to their family and think, okay, hey kids, I want to make this change in my life to pursue higher education. This is going to help us have a better lifestyle. I'll be able to make more money, have more responsibility at work, but that's going to require a sacrifice for a little bit of time where the person, the dad or the mom, is not going to be around as much while they're going to school. So that's what we're talking about, ecology. When you make a change in your life, how does that affect all the other parts and pieces and people that are involved in your lifestyle? Okay, so number three, resistance in a client is a sign of lack of rapport. There are no resistant clients, only inflexible communicators. Effective communicators accept and utilize all communication presented to them. All right, so this is about people who are becoming NLP practitioners such as myself and are going to use this probably for like some type of coaching or some type of coaching practice in the future. When we make this applicable to people who are not NLP coaches, instead of saying the client, you could just say a person. There are no resistant people, only inflexible communicators. Okay, for example, you might want to like talk to your boss or supervisor about getting a raise. If you bring that up to him or her and say, hey, I've been with the company for X amount of time, I've done this and that, I would like to be able to negotiate an increase in pay. If that person doesn't see, if they're not seeing it, like they're like, nah, we can't do that, or nah, I don't think so. It's not that they're being quote unquote resistant. It's that you haven't found a way to communicate, or I guess what we should say, the responsibility is on you to communicate your wants and your needs in a way that's going to make sense to them. So maybe your boss really likes, a certain type of projects that you've done, or the person, this is really important to that person, like that you're very self-motivated and that you take on your own projects. So then when you go to your boss looking for the raise, you can, instead of just saying like, oh, hey, I've been here 5 or 10 years, I want a raise, you can say, hey, I did this initiative. I spearheaded this project. I led this group. I think that all of this qualifies me to receive an increase in pay. They probably might be more receptive to that if that is in line with their values. Like, oh, this person takes initiative, they work hard, they're self-motivated. You may have another boss that cares more about communication, like that you have a good rapport with the team or good relationships within your team. And for that scenario, you would say, hey, I'm good friends with this person. I help this guy with this committee. I help this person with this project. I'm a team player, da, da, da. You want to basically, when you're speaking to somebody, emphasize what's important to them. And I don't know if it's in this one. Yeah, there's another precept that touches on this, and I'm going to try to remember to go back this later. I'll just say it now. One of the presuppositions that we're going to cover is the meaning of communication is the response it gets. And that's kind of related to, resistance is a lack of rapport. When you're in rapport with somebody, you're thinking about what their values are. You're sort of placing their needs and their context above your own and creating that connection to where the person likes you. They know they like and they appreciate you. You're feeling that vibe of like, oh, we get each other. We're rapport, I would consider it to be like vibing, right? Like, oh, we get each other. We like each other. And so when you have that rapport, when you're talking to that person, the way they want to be communicated with, everything should be easy, or communication and stuff should be easy. Number four, that's where we're at, 15, 12 minutes. Number four, people are not their behaviors. This is a good one. This is a great one for making connections and for appreciating other people in a way that doesn't make you angry or doesn't get on your nerves. If you just think, okay, this person is not this behavior, which I find annoying or off-putting, right? There's a person there and that's separate from this behavior that I may not like. And this is a great thing to keep in mind when dealing with almost anybody, because unless you have noticed, there goes my dog again. Most of us have noticed that even if you like somebody and really enjoy being around them, they may have a behavior or something that they do that you just don't like, or it just disagrees with you. But if you separate that person from their acts, it makes it easier to just appreciate the person. I can appreciate my coworker, my brother, this person, that person, without making the things that they do that I don't like the whole focus of their personality. All right. So that's number one. Number four, people are not their behaviors. The individual human infinite being who is a part of the universe, just as you are, is not, chewing out loud, is not the act of like chewing with their mouth open, or if they interrupt you a lot, or if they talk about themselves a lot or whatever. Right. Okay. Hopefully you guys are getting something out of this, because this is just one of the tasks that I needed to do for my certification. And I decided to record it and put it on the internet without even washing my face this morning or combing my hair or cleaning up my kitchen behind me. So very impromptu. All right. Number five. This is a good one as well. Any single one of these presuppositions will improve, in my opinion, will improve and deepen the relationships that you have with other people, which in turn, and I wrote about this recently on thesolitarybeast.com, which in turn will help you to accept yourself. Like when I started accepting other people and being understanding of other people, that helped me to be understanding and accepting and empathetic toward myself. I started having more self-acceptance. So give this a shot. Number five, everyone is doing the best they can with the resources they have available. And that is a big one, right? So because it ties into the number one, respect for other people's model of the world. If we understand that everybody has their priorities, if somebody wants to be like a corporate executive, they're going to have different priorities and a different way of even structuring their whole day than somebody who wants to be like a pro snowboarder or a pro surfer. Somebody values family and relationships. They have a different way that they approach every decision in their lives more than somebody whose values are freedom and travel and independence, right? So everybody is doing the best they can with the resources they have available. And we all didn't have loving parents. We all didn't have a good education. We all didn't have grow up in a neighborhood where, you know, we felt safe or whatever. But no matter what that person's background is or who they are, they're doing the best they can. And this is something to keep in mind with, even if you see vagrants on the street. I have a big problem with people who like sleep in public parks and leave trash everywhere. After I record this, I'm going to go take my little bucket and grabber and go pick up trash in my neighborhood. Because sometimes we have these vagrants that kind of like leave trash everywhere and sort of, I feel it's antisocial behavior. But some of those people may be struggling with addictions. They may have had abuse in their past. They may have had trauma from being in the military, and they're just doing the best they can to survive, just as I am, just as you are, with whatever you have. That makes me so much more sensitive and caring about other people. Just their background, their previous experiences, their education level, their how much love and they received as a child is what you have, right? You don't get to make these decisions for yourself about what type of family that you're going to come from. But everybody's doing the best that they can no matter what. And if we understand that, it allows us to be gracious and compassionate towards everybody. All right. Number six, calibrate on behavior. And the subheading here, the most important information about a person is that person's behavior. I love that. I'm actually going to grab my highlighter and highlight that. The most important information about a person is that person's behavior. That's cool, right? And a lot of times you can see behavior, right? You can look at somebody and sort of see how they conduct themselves. You know, what's their posture like? Is it erect and upright? You can tell like how they feel about themselves a lot of ways. Dude, the dog is so freaking annoying. Do they take care of their body? Are they relatively fit? You know, how do they dress? How do they speak? How do they make eye contact? These are just very subtle things or very surface level things, but I believe it means a lot. It means a lot to me if I see somebody and they're slumped over and they won't look me in the eye, rather as opposed to another person who stands up straight. Hey, how are you? Makes good eye contact. And it just shows you a lot about that person based on their behavior. So number six is calibrate on behavior, which would also imply that you are paying attention to that person's behavior and how the way that you're interpreting that, right? So I like that one, calibrate on behavior. Number seven, the map is not the territory. The words we use are not the event or item they represent. Basically, this one means your perception of reality is not reality. You can obviously only, of all the things that are happening around you at all times, you're only actually aware of a small amount of information that's going on in your environment. Like, I'm roughly aware of the temperature in this room right now, the chair that I'm sitting on. But here's the thing. As I'm starting to read this, I realize, like, I'm not thinking about this chair. I'm sitting on a chair, but I'm not thinking about it because I'm focused on this. I'm focused on the words I'm saying. I'm looking at my image on the computer screen. Basically, what I'm saying is that you can only focus on a certain very, very, very small amount of information at any given time. So it's possible to miss a lot of things. It's possible to interpret things wrong, and the map is not the territory. So I just was talking about number six, calibrate on behavior. So you may say, okay, well, this person's behavior, I'm interpreting this and this and this about them. But you have to understand, even though we're doing that, we have to remember that just because I perceive that this person isn't looking me in the eye, they're shady or they have low self-confidence. Maybe they're just tired. Maybe that person got something in their eye and they're just like trying not to you know, make eye contact with me because they're trying to get, you know, get a some dust out of their eye, or their contact is bothering them, or they're tired, or they're sleepy. They had to stay up late the night before with the baby, or they work two jobs and they're just really low energy. If you make an assumption about somebody, I mean, that's valuable. But if I believe that my assumption is the capital R reality, that's also ineffective, because I need to be like, oh, I'm interpreting that this person, and I learned this in dialectical behavior therapy. I need to be aware of the fact that, oh, I'm interpreting that this person isn't looking me in the eye. I'm interpreting that this person is slumped over. I'm interpreting that this person is moving slowly. Maybe they're, and then I think, oh, they're lazy. They don't want to be here. They don't like this job, whatever. And maybe they're just tired. You know, they had to stay up all night taking care of their sick grandma, and they have two jobs and they go to school and they're just very low energy that day because they're tired. So the map is not the territory. That's super important. Number eight, you are in charge of your mind and therefore your results. I am also in charge of my mind and therefore my results. Louise Hay has a saying that I really love, and I have this on a post-it note and had it like on my bathroom mirror for years. Louise Hay says, you are the only thinker in your mind. And I love that, because basically anything that you focus on is what you're experiencing in that moment. Sometimes I catch myself thinking about memories from my past, good and bad. Sometimes I think about, a positive memory, something sensual and beautiful and fun that happened to me. Sometimes something negative or sad that made me sad. And in that moment, I just become engrossed in the emotion of being sad or being playful, excited and happy based on what I'm thinking about. But I'm the person that chooses those thoughts. I am the person that chooses to think about something that may make me feel sad, or chooses to have an empowering thought as well. I am the only person thinking in my mind. So that's exactly what this says. You are in charge of your mind and therefore your results. Similarly, when I think about, for example, the trail running series, I'm in charge of my mind. I'm in charge of whether or not I'm going to wake up early and stretch and run and prepare for these trail races so that I feel good when I go out there, or if I choose to slack and just drink beer and watch YouTube videos and read books and lie in my hammock in the afternoons and sleep in and not run, and then I'll feel like crap when I'm running up and down mountains in the summer in Utah. So you're in charge of your mind and therefore your results is presupposition number eight. And that one is super empowering. I'm going to highlight that. I might put this hat back on because I have like bedhead. All right, number nine, people have all the resources they need to succeed and achieve their desired outcomes. And that's super true now that we live in the era of this much technology. Like, I just sparked up my computer, plugged in a $100 microphone, and now I'm recording a podcast that many people might listen to for years later. Dozens of people will listen to for probably years after I'm recording this. And that's cool, right? You can do anything. We all have the resources that we need. And even if you don't currently have the money and things that you need, you have the ability to figure out how to get it. Let's say that I wanted to record a podcast, but I didn't own a laptop and I didn't have a microphone and didn't have internet access at my house. I might be able to, first of all, the public library in my city rents out computers, and I think they have like a podcasting studio. So I might be able to get a free library card and go in and use their resources and record a podcast. Maybe I could ask a friend or a neighbor or coworker, can I borrow your computer? Can I borrow your phone? Maybe if I didn't have a laptop and a microphone, I could use my cell phone. Plenty of people record podcasts on their cell phone, right? It doesn't have to be the best quality, the best multi-million dollar studio, but it would help me get the ball rolling if I really wanted it, or if somebody that really wanted that to get started. Sometimes I watch YouTube videos. How many people have seen this? You'll watch a YouTube video that maybe has tens of thousands of views or hundreds of thousands of views, and you could obviously tell it was recorded on an iPhone. It doesn't matter, and almost everybody has a phone of some type. We all have the resources, or you can ask to borrow, or you can figure out how to get, or you can, you know, you can make it happen. And even that, your ability, your relationships with people are resources. My ability to ask a friend or a coworker, hey, can I borrow your computer real quick? Or my ability to go to the library is a resource. My ability to think about, well, what can I do? Can I go to to Best Buy, if Best Buy even exists. And I go to Best Buy and record myself on their like demo computers and figure out a way to email it to myself and record it and do it that way, right? Somebody who was super resourceful might even do that. Go to every electronic store in the city and record themselves on the computers that they have right there and then email it to themselves, and they can have a podcast, get the podcast started at least doing that. So you can be resourceful if you need to be. And according to precept number 9, people have all the resources they need to succeed and achieve their desired outcomes. Even thinking about that is empowering, because when you put yourself in the position of thinking, I have all the resources I need to achieve my desired outcome, then it's like possibilities start to open up when you just tell yourself that. All right. Number 10, all procedures should increase wholeness. I believe that this one is related to number 2, which is behavior and change are to be evaluated in terms of context and ecology. So all procedures should increase wholeness. I believe that means, I probably need to look that up, but just off the top of my head, I think that it means that you want to, whenever you're making decisions and choices in your life, that you want to keep the main goal in mind. For example, my main goal is to live a happy, healthy, long life and to contribute to my family and the world around me and society in a positive way, speaking generally. So in order to think that, I have to think, okay, well, I probably shouldn't abuse hard drugs. I probably shouldn't, gamble and engage in, well, maybe gambling is okay now, but I probably shouldn't do things that are antisocial, like, you know, being rude to my family, being rude to my neighbors, things like that. In a nutshell, without getting to start rambling, all procedures should increase wholeness means beginning with the end in mind, starting out for what kind of person do you want to be? What kind of life do you want to build for yourself? What kind of legacy do you want to leave on the planet? And then making decisions and choices, even in small things, based on that. That means you don't, if you see like $10 in the cash register at work, you don't take the $10. Not because, even if you could use it to buy a cheeseburger or something, you just think, okay, this is not the type of person that I want to be. This is not the example that I want to set. This is not the legacy that I want to leave. And I just don't want to be the type of person who, you know, steals money or takes things that aren't theirs. So that's kind of a small example, but hopefully that makes sense. It just means, that means to me is keeping in mind the type of person that I want to be, the type of example that I want to set, and making all choices and decisions from that perspective. Okay, number 11. I love this one. There is only feedback. So the long version of this that I usually see is there is no failure. There's only feedback. And this is something that I need to think about a lot, because I've written a lot on solitarybeast.com. Some people will, this will be their first time hearing about Solitary Beast, but my blog is called solitarybeast.com. It's just kind of a blog about being sort of somewhat of a loner and a like solitary minded person. And in that blog, I write a lot about like social rejection and things I've experienced like that, social and romantic rejection. But that's a good example of how there's no failure. I didn't fail those times that I went out and tried to make friends or try to date people. I got feedback about things I can change and ways that could be better. Ultimately, it was an enlightening experience because it led me to, for example, therapy. I was like, why am I having such a hard time forming relationships when everybody around me seems easy and natural to so many other people? So that led me to a spiritual practice. It led me to therapy, things like that. I didn't fail. I learned things. I learned what didn't work, and I learned how to get information about what might work better. So this is a quote from Thomas Edison. Everybody has heard the story about Thomas Edison and then the light bulb, right? He goes to invent something that the world had never seen before, which is a way to create light using electricity. Prior to that, people were having kerosene lamps and candles and campfires, things like that. So Thomas Edison goes to invent something that the world has never conceived of. And he famously had to try like 10,000 times. And at some point during this process, he was trying to set different things on fire and burn different things up and failing and going into the back to the lab and trying again and just wasn't getting it right. And according to the story, a reporter or someone asked him, hey, you know, how can you keep going when you just keep failing over and over? Like, what motivates you to keep going in your laboratory and keep trying to invent this thing that nobody's ever even heard of? And Thomas Edison famously said something like, I have not failed. I've just discovered 10,000 ways that don't work. And I love that. I love that. In my job, I often have to like fix or repair things, electronic things, mechanical things. And sometimes I can't figure out what's wrong. And in those moments, I have to tell myself, well, I didn't, I'm, even though I feel frustrated that I haven't been able to resolve the issue, the thing is that I just figured out things that didn't work. Now I know all the things that are not wrong with this piece of equipment, right? Because all the things I tested. And rounding around the corner, number 12, the meaning of communication is the response that you get. That means if you think you tell somebody, this dog's going crazy, I'm sorry, y'all. If you say some words and you think that you're communicating to somebody, it doesn't mean anything unless that person's behavior changes in the way that you want it to. So like you can say, well, I told him 100 times that he needs to clean his room. If a kid doesn't clean his room or whatever you've been saying, it means that you haven't communicated with that person effectively. You just saying, clean your room to maybe a 6 or 7 year old, maybe that's not what they need to hear. Maybe they want you to communicate with them in a different way. Hey, little Timmy, the reason why I want you to clean up your room is because if you go to use the bathroom in the middle of the night, you don't stub your toe on your toy fire truck and then cry or whatever. Or hey, if you clean up your room, you can become an effective citizen and grow up and be big and strong like Captain America. Whatever you need to tell the person is about communicating with them on their level, not about what you think you need to say. The meaning of communication is the response you get. Number 13, the law of requisite variety. The system and person with the most behavioral flexibility will influence the system. This means that the person that can be the most flexible, the most maybe patient, whatever the situation requires. Maybe you're in a situation with something that requires like a ton of patience or a ton of empathy or somebody who's like super highly motivated to do it. Whatever different resources that you have available, emotional resources or mental capacity, whatever you have, whatever. I'm kind of stumbling over my words here. Whoever in a situation has the most resources at their disposal is going to have the most power or control. Okay. So that means that maybe you're speaking to somebody and they only speak Spanish, but you're a native English speaker and you only speak English. The person who can be the most flexible, maybe using their hands to communicate or drawing a picture, or maybe you have an app on your phone that helps translate for you, or you can call a friend that speaks Spanish. You're being the most flexible, you're going to have the most control in that situation. And number 14, thanks for sticking with me, guys. And we're rounding up here. All procedures should be designed to increase choice. And in my notes, I have that choice equals flexibility. That one, I'm going to be dead honest with you guys. I'm not sure how to exactly describe that. But hey, this has been Chance Berryman. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode of my podcast in which I explained the 14 presuppositions of NLP. Go check out solitarybeast.com and chanceberryman.com. They're the same website for more information about my writing and things I've been working on. And I look forward to seeing all of y'all soon. Thanks for being with me. Peace.